You are now tuned in to the Believe Network. Do you believe?
All right, guys, welcome to the Hardwick Life Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Hardwick. Our guest today on the show is going to be Neil Filora. Neil is a serial entrepreneur. He's a speaker. He's a relationship mentor. His work has been featured in several national TV spots, multitude of podcasts with other names featured like Gary Vee and Seth Godin. And he's featured in a book about public speaking. His clients are intuitive, they're heart-centric, they're visionaries, they're high net worth leaders, and they're celebrities. And Neil teaches people how to master their internal world so their external world is simple. Neil stands for radical change for his clients through the ignition of their divine creative center. He takes his 10-year background in life coaching and brain science to help his clients with the Brain Warrior Method. Neil left high six-figure business development career to start businesses, focus on family, and to heal himself. And it is on his journey out of chronic illness and anxiety that he found lasting change. And that came through rewiring the levels of mind and the body. This is going to be a fascinating podcast, and I do hope you enjoy. Hi, Neil.
What's up, brother?
How are you, buddy?
I'm living the good life, just in the thick of family and business. I have 5-year-old boy girl twins, and my little girl has decided that she's really afraid of the dark. So we haven't been sleeping for the past 3 weeks. So we just I've tried all kinds of things. I made a unicorn protector, and now we got this IKEA canopy, and we're putting lights over it. And my wife is getting some children's melatonin because she's just not sleeping, and she's like, you know, super emotional. And so just parent stuff, dude. Nothing that you're not
familiar. Parent stuff. I had my youngest Teddy was in my room last night at 4:45 waking up, and he had a bad dream and he couldn't go back to sleep and all that, right? And I was like, hey bud, come on, we thought we were past this. You're 7 years old, but I guess you're never past parenting, right? So it's interesting. I do wonder, like, do you guys have a real set bedtime routine for them? Same time, same process, kind of wind down, that whole thing where it's like very systematic and then they kind of know that it's time to go to bed?
I would say loosely, we're not like, you know, some parents that will just let them stay up till their bedtime is fairly consistent. I wouldn't say, and they get a story read to them. They have little timers, they brush their teeth, they know what to do. By the same regard, I also wanted some flexibility with them too. You know, I saw a lot of my friends that they were so ruled by their kids' schedule that they never could do anything because it was always all about the kids. So
especially early on, right? Like I forget what the program was, Baby Wise. There was Baby Wise, and then there was another one that is like 12, what is it? It's 12 weeks to 12 hours or something, I think, is the new one that's kind of like Baby Wise, where, you know, it's so systematic and you have to have them down by the minute. And it's like, you know, we got to leave the party. We got to go. We got to be home. We got to get them down. And it's like, this is life, right? Like, this is living. We can experience and find that balance, right? So to the point a little bit, I definitely agree with you, is not being ruled by the bedtime and having some flexibilities. The only reason I asked, I had a really good podcast guest. She's a Yale professor and she's in charge of sleep at Connecticut Children's Hospital. Dr. Schneeberg's her name. And she was so into having bedtime routines and how important those were. And then she had a couple of really cool tricks too. Like, you get a voucher and you only get one voucher for mom and dad to come back in the room per night. So make sure that that voucher counts, right? It's like all these little things that you kind of set the boundaries, which we all know boundaries in any relationship are important, but it's like bedtime boundaries for the kids are super important. And, you know, I always think, I'm like, with my boys, I'm like, what are you not getting? Right? Like, why do you, and she may legitimately be scared of the dark. Like Teddy, my youngest, has been saying the same thing. And so we got him a little nightlight or whatever. And it's like, and then he wakes up in the middle of the night. I'm like, well, what are you not getting from us that you may want while you're awake that you have to get while we're all supposed to be going to bed?
Well, and the interesting thing is that, you know, in the first 7 years of your life, you're probably familiar with this too, you're in this theta wave brain state. theta wave brain state, and it's literally the state of hypnosis. Well, yep. as we start to come out of that brainwave state, we also start to enter into a place where we get more, we enter consciousness, and we start to become more self-aware and less self-involved in the make-believe, which is a superpower that we all have that adults unfortunately let go of. We should transition from make-believe to belief makers, but instead we download human operating system 1.0, which is shit happens and you die. And while people fundamentally say they don't believe that, that's the micro process, their supercomputer back here is processing that. But so if this is a time when fears come, just kind of come online to some degree. It's really common during this age bracket.
Yeah.
As they start to think about things and random events. And I remember thinking about some of those things, like somebody can grab you from underneath your bed or, all those things. Yeah.
So, my kids are scared of our basement. And I remember being really scared of our basement, and it's part of the house, of course, but it's like dark, it's cold. There's funny rooms in there with strange sounds. And I totally remember that. And I still see them, like they flip the lights when they're done downstairs, and then they sprint up the stairs like something's chasing after them. It's funny. And it's really interesting hearing you even talk about theta waves. And the brain kind of transitioning out of there. And this is obviously your world now. I live my life in a world of theta wave production. I have had brain treatment after coming out of football and everything. And I've talked not a whole lot about that. I've posted, I've shared about it, and people know that I have it. I'm certainly not running from it. The damage of football is undeniable. But I had an EEG done. I was 5 years out, and I started to notice a little bit of the effects, and my brain wasn't kind of making the connections that I wanted it to. And I didn't feel like it was firing as fast as, and you know, there's these things you get when your brain's not super healthy that you like hole up, and they call it, well, the people that I've talked to call it caveman mentality, right? It's like, I can only take care of myself right now. So everybody else stay the hell away from me. It's like, this is too much for me to handle. So I don't want to deal with you. I didn't want to go socialize. And, you know, I went and got brain treatment, which was magnetic e-resonance therapy. If anybody wants to look into it, the brain treatment centers, braintreatmentcenter.com is really good in San Diego. That's my buddy who was a Navy SEAL referred me to that. And I got an EEG obviously on the intake, and then every 2 weeks after that. And I live in the theta wave production center. And I don't know, because I didn't have an EEG, unfortunately, before I started playing football. I wish I would have, because I don't know if that was my natural state of homeostasis, or if I got kind of beaten into this monk-like state of theta production. I live in hypnosis, so I'm still a big dreamer. Maybe you'd be happy about that. It's like, I'm a dream maker.
I would be extremely happy about that. I mean, if you think about where most adults are, they're usually in beta or high beta, and we weren't meant physiologically to be in this fight or flight all of the time. Previously, it was just about survival from elements, rains, and predators. But now we have all of these things, FOMO and who has the bigger house and more money and better looking and less wrinkles. And we have Instagram and Facebook and all of these things to compound that in a way that we can never get back into the. There's a thalamic gate between the subconscious and the conscious. And it's just a matter of being able to shift your brain waves from beta to alpha, which is closer to the subconscious, and then back into theta. But if 95 or 98% of how we're going to react by the time we're 30 in any situation is already in the supercomputer called the old brain, is already wired here, then we're not at free will. I mean, this brain back here is 40 times more powerful than our thinking brain in terms of processing power. And that's the thing, if people struggle, and that's one of the things I emphasize in my coaching, it's not you, it's your biology, because we're really come up against a wall where will and determination aren't going to do anything for you.
Right. Yeah, because everybody's looking for habit change. We're going to circle back to this, because that's kind of the crux of what I want to get to with you, because that's the world you live in, coaching people and how to change and how to improve. And we're all looking for that, right? Like everybody's looking for the same thing, but you're right. It's willpower can only go so far and hard work can only go so far if you're operating on the subconscious mind, like you said, 95 to 98% of the time. If the old caveman brain is in charge of us, well, we're screwed, right? Like you, so you can't change after 30, or some people would, even if you haven't put like conscious effort into making those changes, you can't even change after you come out of the womb because you've been given the genetics and you watch your parents and how they interact and how they give you all of those operating systems, and you're just floating along through life dealing with the operating system you were given rather than finding a way to upgrade. So let's circle back real quick and just give me a little brief Neil Filora intro. Give me the story here.
Sure, absolutely. So it's significant to say that my dad came from abject poverty at the base of the Himalayas, you know, and wow. Only because he got two doctor degrees. So he was a maverick. He was a disruptor. And so am I, you know, and I grew up fixing everything and opening up everything because it was a farmer's mentality who had a couple of doctor degrees. And so I grew up with a large degree of functional unfixedness, right? It's like, I could use anything for anything that I needed to solve a problem. I see the solution and then I just work it backwards, knowing that the parts are there. And so that's the mentality that I grew up with. But I always found myself to be really empathic and energy seeking. So while I have the science background, I'm equally artistic and, you know, spiritual, if you want to put it in those terms, right? And yep. So I found myself on the receiving end of a lot of people who needed counsel. I went to medical school, got into medical school early, and was going on that track until something started happening with my body that I really didn't understand, that didn't fit nicely into allopathic medicine, right? Mm-hmm. My preceptors were like, you know, shut the fuck up and go back and study, kind of basically. Med school is not about being the smartest. It's about trial by fire and how much can you take and process, right? So I went into business development. I ran a company within an 80,000 person company. It was an amazing job and learned so much, got to travel. But when I traveled, Nick, my C-suite clients, the people, I was helping them lose weight. I was helping them in and out of relationships, getting different jobs. I sat with people and cried with people on airplanes because they were going through something tough. That was the way in which I stayed alive, because I needed to connect with other people. And that finally found me when I met the right woman in my life, who gave me the permission to stop being so type A and lean more into my spirituality. I was chronically in bed probably 85 to 90% of the time for 6 years. And so I had 100.
What was going on in the body?
So that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. You asked a beautiful question. In medicine, we've got to always go, hey, this is pathognomonically the thing that was causing all the other things. But there wasn't the thing, Nick.
It was everything.
I had tests, 4 inches deep. I had the emergency room visits, 20, 30 of them. I had EKGs. I had MRIs. Nothing is wrong with me. You want to bet something's wrong with me? I come to the end of my block and my brain fog is so thick, I have no idea why I'm there or where I'm going. I'm going into early onstage dementia and I can't even explain why. And then because I am such a, like, I'm going to find the answer, I started discovering all these people all around the world in different WhatsApp groups and different methodologies who were taking their brain chemistry and rewiring it. And over, I had 95 more pounds on me. I was not functional. You know, I'm probably got 20% left on my journey, but I have a completely different viewpoint. But so that's how I came up with Brain Warrior, is because it's not just about rewiring the brain, it's rewiring all levels of mind in the body, because we can show now through Joe Dispenza, many people, my own research and in talking to hundreds and thousands of people, is that the body is a subconscious mind. And so when we can start to rewire that, we can bring our autonomic nervous system back into homeostasis, and we can cure and help so many things that are going on in the body.
I think one of the beautiful things now in the time that we're living, and obviously the time that we're living has a lot of trouble and a lot of its own issues, but the connectivity is great. You can find people like Joe Dispenza, who I'm well aware of, and kind of his research. And I love waking up in the morning and putting him on YouTube. And I get on a bike every morning and I truck along, but you know, the power to change. I think that's such an incredible thing. And then the other thing that I think is really nice right now in kind of the brain world and the neuroscientist world is we have stopped, certain people have stopped separating the brain from the body, right? And separating the mind from the body. And people, it is the body. It's not a separate unit. It is the body. And I had a post recently about this. It's like, what's good for the brain is good for the body. And what's good for the body is good for the brain. They're the same thing. So thankfully, people have stopped separating the two and isolating them because they are the same. The brain is the body. You can't say it's different. It's not. It's the same thing. And then further, like there's all of these inputs that come in through our skin as our body, our eyes, or our skin is our brain, our eyes are our brain, our gut microbiome is our brain, right? Like everything you think about is part of the brain, and it's impossible to separate them.
I absolutely love it. And looking at it, you know, in scientific terms, we call this like a functional syncytium. Syncytium is like it all operates as one, right? It mm-hmm. And one of the things, there's this guy by the name of Nassim, who's this really amazing physicist. You'd like his stuff. If you haven't seen any of it, I'll forward you some links on him. Oh, he's cool. Been showing consciousness through physics for about 25, 30 years. He had tomatoes thrown at him, death threats. He's now on the forefront. In the next two decades, he's gonna revolutionize energy in a way. We won't go deep on this podcast about it, but he has been showing those things, and it's just like he describes, like we have all these disciplines in science, but the problem is that they're all separate. He said, yep. And he's basically coming up with a unifying theory of everything, because that's really how things function. And because we have these separate disciplines, even in medicine, and I'm not vilifying medicine. There's if you're having a heart attack, you can't meditate yourself into you better go to the hospital, right? I mean, right. Yes. But in the same sense, there's so much separate, and I call it like the Hydra, like, you know, to a large degree, it's the autonomic nervous system, like the vagus nerve innervates almost every major organ. And so somebody has palpitations and they have digestive issues and they have anxiety issues. And so they're getting separate doctors and treatments and pills for all these things. But if we go back to the nervous system and to the entrainment of the tissues into the brain health, we can knock all of those out, you know, with one local treatment, yep. Like what you've done, right? But this is not the mainstay of how we address health.
Yes. Yeah. And unfortunately, I think obviously for me, the body as a system, like it's very evident too, as we're going through COVID and the pandemic and the way we're spoken to through the media and everything, it's interesting that so an immunologist, right, is concerned about the virus, like solely the virus, when there's a whole system at play. So we're like, for example, we own gyms, and of course I'm a little biased in this, but it's like we're shutting down gyms where people go to get healthy, which Dr. Reedy, who's a Harvard neuroscientist, he's got a beautiful book called Spark Out. He will contend that the best solution for mental health and brain health, and a lot of guys will say the same, guys and gals and doctors will say the same thing, it's the only way to get yourself into a healthy position is through exercise and through a good diet. And we're limiting people's ability to exercise, which is then reducing their ability to fight off any issues that may come as we're in the middle of this pandemic. And it's like, we're allowing people to become weaker because of the fear of catching something, instead of building ourselves to the place where, and getting ourselves physically and from a brain standpoint to a place where we can handle whatever's coming, right? Like, and this is just a little rant here. Like, this is just kind of I guess everything coming to a head with what they would call like helicopter parenting or snowplow parents, where it's like, let's plow the road so our kids do not have any hazards instead of getting our kids ready for the road, right? It's like, we know the road's treacherous. Prepare yourself for it. And it's like, no. The new philosophy is, let's plow the road and then everyone will just have a really easy way. But it doesn't work that way. It's like, you have to prepare yourself for life, because life does have a lot of things that it can throw at you.
Oh my gosh, we could have a separate 2-hour podcast on just this, my friend.
Totally.
But my brief statement on this is, one is, I say this to my kids all the time. They're like, I can't. I say, the first, what do we say as Flores? We don't say those words. The first way of solving something, they're like, I can. And the second is, they're struggling with something. I'm like, it's okay to struggle. I'm like, keep struggling. I'm like, keep going. I say, it's tell yourself it's okay to struggle. They're like, it's okay to struggle, you know, because
nice. Cause, I like that.
Because you need to keep going. And as far as movement is concerned, I wish I could find the 60 minutes. There was this dude in his late 60s, and he had one fall, and he decided to make his whole backyard this playground. He made these jungle gyms, and he made these toe touches, and he had this really weird contraption thing. And he rehabilitated his life, and he's teaching seniors. And what happens is that as we grow older, we become more and more emotionally constipated. We become more and more living from the brain rather than living from experience. And we become more and more fearful. And as we become more and more fearful, we exercise less. We become more rigid. We have more toxicity build up in our muscles, right? And then we have more things deteriorate because we're not moving. And then we have a small injury. And then when we finally fall, but because we're so inflexible and because we're reactive instead of relaxed, right? Because that's why the drunk driver never gets hurt in the accident, because he's totally, or she's totally relaxed, but the other person tenses right up. They have major injury. Right now, I actually have reached out to 2 different dance teachers online, where I may just start some YouTube videos, but I'm like going to dance. I'm like, there's a couple kinds of dance that I've always wanted to do, you know, like EMD type music and stuff like that. And I'm like, I'm going to learn this, cause I want to do it with my kids. I want to do it with my wife, but I want to rehabilitate my brain. And I know inherently, like, my body is telling me I need to move in unique and new ways rather than kind of the safe exercise regimen that, yes, I've been doing for a while, so that I can have the next level of brain health. And this is such,
it's brilliant. Dance is really profound for brain health, isn't it?
Huge, because it's 2 things. It's one, it's a systematic movement. It's an expression, which you're expressing yourself emotionally. But music is one of the few things, and this is why I have guitars over here that I'm picking back up again, is that brain is the music is the one thing that encompasses the whole brain as you listen to it or play it. It involves the whole brain when you do that. And so I think that's why dance is, it has that component to it.
So. Yeah. Oh, super cool. Circle back, if you would. We were talking about theta and beta wave production and kind of our inability to toggle between the conscious mind and the unconscious mind, or the prefrontal cortex and the amygdala and the old centers in the brain. Talk about that, because I would imagine a lot of your work now is kind of centered around that and helping people navigate. It's tricky, right? It's like it's a really tricky area to kind of navigate, to have habit change, or to be able to like adopt a new lifestyle. It's like, why do so many diets not work? Because people can't change their habits, right? It's like, it's they're operating on autopilot 95 to, like you said, 98% of the time. It's habit change is brutally hard.
It is brutally hard. And literally, this is one thing that I've talked to clients about, my thing on weight, which will dovetail into your question, is that as the diets fail in the first 2 to 4 weeks, primarily because as we start to get in that, the body, the mind body, which we don't ever think about our body actually being the mind. Well, how is it that you can be drunk at 1:30 at night, but not remember your ATM, but go in and you can still press the numbers, is because it's rehearsed in the body. You know, this as an athlete, right? We rehearse so much that you don't actually need the mind. There are studies that show now that we don't actually see the spider first. We actually first feel the fear and then we actually see it. Right. Wow. So the body is the mind. And when you get to that place in the diet, the body is going, look, I need my hit, like literally tapping on its arm like a junkie. You eat Doritos and that Snickers bar at 2, and we function on cycles of guilt and shame, and you want to feel good about yourself and you want to eat better? No. Come back here. I need my hit, right? It's literally, there's a place in the brain called the PCM, you can look it up. It's called the PCM. And it is a thermostat in your brain. So if you, Nick, are a 72-degree guy, it wants to neurochemically keep you in that place. Its job is to neurochemically, like a rubber band, snap you back into the ego's version of what you think you are neurochemically, right? And so this is why change becomes really hard. The second point of navigating these different brainwave states is that we're dealing with the center of the brain, the emotional brain, the amygdala brain, which operates like a 2 to 3 year old child. It is literally, and you have to speak to it and negotiate with it like a 2-3 year old child. Think about like when you get irritated during the day, and by the end of the day, you don't even know why you're pent up. It's because that amygdala, like a fist, has become more and more tense, more and more tantrum-like. And I used to travel in airports. Adults act worse than children. In the corporate world, adults were worse than children. I mean, because why, Nick? Because we are emotionally constipated. And without the ability of the cryptocurrency of being able to let your emotions be used and all of them felt and not keep escaping them and escaping the body, it becomes much harder. And if you want to make a new brainwave state, you need your emotional brain and your thinking brain to work together in a way to produce a new visual of what's going on in your world, and you need the emotions to do that. And that becomes the primary challenge, because what's the number one thing when something emotional happens that adults say? I'm just trying so hard not to be emotional. Or try giving another adult, I give this to my clients as an experiment, try giving adults compliments for 2 weeks. It's nearly impossible. It's shunned in three phases: deflection, rejection, or qualification, S-U-H-N. Oh, That's a cool top you have on. Oh, that's something in my closet. Hey, that was an amazing play you ran. You know, team effort. We've done it a million times. Wasn't a big deal. You know, coach really showed us the way to go, blah, blah, blah. But no one will like actually say thank you. I received that.
Yeah. Wasn't that an awesome play? Or man, I really like the cowl neck on that sweater, Neil. That's pretty cool.
Thank you. I received
that. Yeah. I dig that. Looks good. And then, so that's deflection, and then reflection is the next one.
So I say shun, S-U-H-N, instead of T-I-O-N.
Yes.
So rejection, deflection, or qualification, right? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Give me an example of the last word, qualification.
Oh, so qualification would be like in the corporate world, like you might come up to somebody, you're like, wow, that was an amazing, the account you just won over, that was a huge account, whatever else. Well, you know, I wasn't really my account to begin with. Somebody else was working on it and it was just transferred to me. So he did most of the work, but you know, I suppose that was pretty good that we finally won it.
Yeah. It's funny because as you're saying that, I always say, I talk about my old quarterback a lot, Philip Rivers, and I think he's one of the best leaders that I've ever been around. And one of the things that I say about him is that he does a great job of sharing the acclaim, but then accepting all the blame, right? And I'm like, that's a man, right? Like, that's what you should be doing as a leader, is like, hey, that was awesome what you did. And he's like, oh, the offensive line did an awesome job and the receiver caught a, you know, wasn't the best pass in the world. So it's like, there's the deflection, right? It's like, want to do that. And then on the other end of things, it's like when things are bad, hey, why is the team not winning? I got to play better, right? And it's right. So it's, you know, as we try to get out of different paradigms that we're stuck in and different ways of thinking and status quo and all that, that may be one that I have to reconsider. It's like, maybe you should accept a little bit of the acclaim and then share just a little bit of the blame. I think that's probably appropriate, but I would also still do anything for that man. So part of me is like, hey, thank you for doing that. And then he'd be like, oh, no big deal, right? Like he would kind of put it into that world.
And I think there's nothing wrong with that leadership style. I would say that whether you're on a team or you're in a corporate environment, having a culture where you routinely point out and celebrate people's individual strengths and hold them up for the rest of people to see in a way that person really gets it is amazing culture and leadership. And so while I agree with you, Philip Rivers is amazing, and thank God that we had him this year on the Colts. One of the things that will really, really help the overall team dynamic in any team is to be able to kind of really, really dive into that as a regular practice and help people really accept and acknowledge that. Humility is one of those bullshit artificial constructs that it's made there so nobody shine too bright, because if you do, then I might have to also shine bright. And we have the safety of the herd by being humble. If you show your strengths, it's great, but you got to be out here on your own.
Yeah.
Right. And that's scary. Why do that? And so that's why I say, to a large degree, humility is a bullshit construct, because it's there so that we don't have to acknowledge or shine with our individual gifts, that we can sort of be mediocre. And I don't know anybody at life's end who has enjoyed mediocrity.
Isn't that the truth? If you don't mind, talk to me about the emotion component of changing behavior and changing habits, because that it's another one of those constructs that you get in your head. You're like, you got to remove the emotion from it and just go pragmatic, but you're saying different. Tell me how that works.
Yes. So there is a false notion that we need to remove emotion for decision. I'll give you an example in the business world, and we can tie it into sports very easily as well. But in the business world, they say, I used to love this. They say, I make all decisions logically, but every ad, every sales pitch, every leaflet that we would hand out is designed to create an experience.
Yep.
We're experiential beings. And in fact, your memories don't become memories unless they are wired with significant emotional quotient, right? They don't become that. So even in practice, when you're practicing a skill set, whether you're rehearsing it in your head, which we can show is almost as effective, athletes have known this for years, as doing it out on the field, unless you are having some emotional payoff during that rehearsal, your neurochemical, neuromusculature, neuro rehearsal is not going to be, your gain is not going to be as profound. When they even train people to pretend that they were doing weightlifting and they had gains, they told them to get into the experience of feeling like I'm powerlifting something and I'm really moving something here. That whole idea, even if you're on the bench press and you're pushing something up, that emotional satisfaction when you finally throw up whatever it is that you're trying to throw up for the fifth time when you haven't ever got it for the fifth time, that is huge. So to say that it's not important and that we need to get our emotions out of the way, that's only because when we start being dropped on our head in life, everybody around us never let us experience it. Oh, you'll be okay. We even our empathy, we use it to justify or to explain it away or to consult it away or whatever else. As soon as some little kid falls, oh my gosh, are you okay? Right? Our first instinct in anybody who's suffering is to rush in and try, shh, it'll be all right. No, just let them have their experience and let it leave their body. So the whole goal is, especially if you're having emotions that are not disruptive, but are quote unquote negative, let the experience come through you fully. That's why kids are so amazing. They cry, they tantrum, and then they get rid of it and it's gone. One minute they're upset and then the next minute they're better. adults, it's like a slow constipated leak, and it never leaves.
I love the emotional constipation. It's such a vivid, because we're backed up, we're overflowed. There's too much going on. To your point about the emotions and learning and growing with the emotions, and partly because of the emotions amplify the learning. It takes me back. I got to do an early podcast with Dr. Andrew Huberman, he's a Stanford neuroscientist, brilliant guy. And part of what he talked about in that was, as we were talking about neural adaptation and growth and plasticity and all that, is he talked about a couple things: the necessity for adults to get frustrated because it releases acetylcholine, which is a super important chemical for us to be able to learn and grow. And without frustration, we're not where we need to be. And then the other thing is, I think it was dopamine or adrenaline, I can't remember which one it was, that amplified that ability to learn. So getting into a heightened state, right? And getting into that place where our body has almost a sense of urgency about it, is how I would simplify it. And combining the frustration with the sense of urgency, and now we've got real growth. And, you know, back to Dr. Rady's book, Spark, I mean, the exercise and learning after exercise, there's a lot of examples of school boards that have put in early exercise into their curriculum, and the kids' scores and the school board's rating has gone through the roof. Like, there's a school in Naperville, Illinois, their school district is like top 10 in the world. I mean, right up there with like Singapore, who's just out of control good. And part of it is because of their physical education program that they've put into place. And so, you know, to the point of bringing emotions into the experience to learn from it, you're 100% right. Like, what moments do we remember in life? The emotional ones. Yeah, they scarred us either in a good way or a bad way, but damn it, you remember them. And that was like, that's the old, you remember it so you don't jump off the cliff, or so you don't get eaten by the lion, right? It's like, they scar you. It's emotional. It's scary, or it's super happy, which draws you back for more, which allows us to reproduce, or it keeps you away from danger.
I give this talk to some college students. I've given it. It's called The Mythologies of Adulting. And one of the things I say to them is that, because there's all this bullshit constructs about being an adult that don't really give you the satisfaction. But I said, look, I said, everything that we do is the end experience of that is the everything that we do is for the experience. And to have an experience, we must be able to be good at processing emotions. But there's no, tribally, there's no role model that sits us down and helps us negotiate and understand and helps us shepherd us through experiencing emotions. And as we become an adult, we actually reject our primary tenet, which is being childish. That's actually a negative. And childish is most often referred to as being emotional. So we've rejected the tenet of using our emotions. And then that is why most of the things in the adult life, when you come to them, they seem like anticlimactic, because we have no ability to experience.
Wow. What are some of the other mythologies of adulthood?
One of them is that, well, I talked about the emotional component. The other thing is that I sort of talked about the experience of, hey, I'm going to live my life in a way that I want to be successful, right? And I want to have success, but the challenge of being successful is what? All of the versions of what I think success was, or why I think I want to do what I want to do in my life, is because my parents have given me this edict about what success looks like. Yeah. So it's not do as I say, it's do as I do, right? And so our versions of success, or our versions of what I think a happy, joyful life, come from these rote programs. And when I start to ask adults why do they want something, or what do they want and why do they want it, they become very, very uncomfortable and agitated. That's because people say to you, oh, well, you'll know what you want when you grow up. No, you don't, because we've never spent enough time exploring why it is that we want something. And when you start to dive into that process, people really honestly don't know why they want. They'll tell you, well, that's just what comes next: married, then job, then house, then kids, then, you know, whatever else that comes next. But why are you following this path? It's so kids thinking that adults know why they want and why they don't want it is false. And what I tell them is that you actually are more in touch with why you want something and what you want and why you want it, because you understand what experience you're trying to create. Most adults are in the pragmatic logistics of just running from one point of consciousness to another without an understanding of why they're going from one place to another.
That's interesting. And then that sets it up for a lot of failure.
Yes.
Right? Because if you don't have a really profound why, and I know there's countless books on why and people talk about why all the time, but if your why is not profound, if it's not visceral, then it doesn't matter at the end of the day.
Well, and here's
I'm sorry. Everything that I've accomplished in my life, my why overwhelmed me. And it compelled me, and there was no choice to be made. It was made, right? So the why is super important. Then I think too, like, people have a good why, but then they forget the why. Like, they go to sleep and they forget the why. It's like, you know, remind yourself of the why. You're forgetting the important thing.
And there are two other points that revolve into that mythologies. Is one is, we use the why as a victim's noose. It starts out wonderful in childhood, but it becomes whenever anything happens that we don't want to happen, we're like, well, why did it happen? Why did it happen to me? And what I teach clients is let's take all your negative objections and put them into why statements. Why is it so easy for me to hustle up the field? Why is it so easy for me to catch the ball? Why is it so easy for me to be a team player, right? Why in just regular life, why is it so easy for me to network and find new clients? Whatever it is that you want to do, because your brain is making these negative statements subconsciously all the time. And now you have a different come from. You're reframing it. And the brain is a storyteller. And any details that it doesn't have is going to fill in. We can show that 50% of people's memory is actually factually inaccurate. It's not even the way that it's happened. And so people are so obsessed with what is true. Who gives a F what is true or not true? It doesn't matter what's true. It only matters what you're trying to prove. There are very few truths in life. And choose the version of truth that's empowering to you. And I'd have some people say, well, that's just making shit up. I said, well, guess what? All those victim stories that you have, that's also just making shit up as well.
Yeah.
You've chosen the version of truth that empowers all those, well, I can't be on the team, I'm not good enough to play, I drop the ball, whatever it is that's in your world, right? I can't be on the project. I don't have the intellectual chops for business development, whatever it is that's going on in your world. You choose those every day. You wake up with them. They're like, they as soon as you look at your face and you recognize you, you're like, what, wait, where's the, oh yeah, yeah. There's the guilt. There's the inadequacy. Oh, I feel like.
Yeah. And most successful people don't, either they wake up with that, but they quickly shed it through positive affirmations and positive talk. And I talk to myself, everybody goes through moments, right? And everybody has days, but I think people who have had a lot of long-term success have found ways to talk to themselves in a very positive manner and to reassure themselves and to encourage themselves, because you're not always going to have somebody there to cheer you on. You better be your own cheerleader, right? Like, I wake up in the morning and my body doesn't feel great, but I know it's going to feel fine once I get going. So it's part of that is like, get your feet on the ground, get moving. And I promise everything's going to be fine. And then I tell myself, compete.
I love it.
Compete today. And once I hear that word, it's like, I'm not competing with anybody else. I don't feel competitive. Like, me and you aren't competitive. I don't feel competitive with other business owners or other people trying to do similar things to me. good for you. There's space in this world for all of us. Like it's all good. I want to compete with myself. And part of that is like, you better talk to yourself in a way that shows respect and love and admiration and hope. Like it's hope and dreaming are incredibly powerful tools in my life. So when you talk about it, like turn those whys into why am I successful? Like, why am I going to continue to succeed? Why is my family full of love? And, you know, it's like, that's awesome, man. That's awesome language.
Yeah. And I, my kids get all this. I'm like, where was this growing up? But this, you would love, you would love this. There's a book. I think it's, I'll have to get the exact title, but it's, I think it's What to Say When You're Talking to Yourself. It's a really good book, but it just doesn't come from this book, but you would like the statistic really well. And when 9/11 happened, they wanted more Navy SEALs. And so they started putting a lot more people through Navy SEAL boot camp, right?
Right.
And they were finding that only 1 out of 6, 1 out of 7 were really making it. So they, and it was not the numbers they were hoping for. So they wanted to kind of go in and go, okay, what is the predetermining factor, right? And most Navy SEALs will even tell you, it's not like, I'm not the strongest person. I'm not like the most, you know, the most athletic person in the world. But what they were finding is that those people that were making it through the boot camp and graduating on Navy SEALs had continuous positive self-talk, because those are the guys who are going to go in the field, get shot in the stomach, pick up their guts, literally put it back in them, throw their mate over their back and going, I'm not dying today. There's no possibility for that. I'm getting back to camp and we are surviving. Right. And that's the big difference.
That's the X factor.
Yeah.
You can have all the talent in the world, but if you don't have that in you, you're going to be a failure. You're going to fail ultimately. I don't want to say you're going to be a failure. How can people get that don't have that? And that's the secret sauce, right? Like that's what everybody's looking for is like, yes, I want to change. I've tried to change. I'm failing to change. What's the missing link in all that?
So it's becoming the compassionate, curious observer of your own self. We have this ability to think about our thinking. It's called metacognition. That's a neuroscientific term. You don't need to know that, but it's most easily demonstrated when you're at a party and you're talking to somebody. And as you're saying something, you're self-judging, you're going, gosh, what I'm saying right now is really stupid. Why am I saying this right now? I feel dumb even saying it, right? That's the thinking about your thinking. Yeah. But what we start to do then is in a compassionately curious way, start to take moments out of your day and set your watch and say, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? And is it health and life affirming? And what's going to happen, Nick, over time is that you're going to start to get a separation between the biological you, the subconscious programming you, and the absolute you that can go, huh, why am I so agitated right now? Well, I was trying to do this deal and it didn't come through. And then I found out from my wife that I have to take the kids today because she and I wasn't expecting that. And so it's cringed my schedule. And now I'm feeling inadequate and I'm feeling frustrated because I want to be farther than I am. And as you start to observe that more and more and you get in touch with that, you start to separate. And all of a sudden, if you do that over and over, there becomes this crack down, this monolith of a rock that we're unable to crack. And we start to then be able to process and understand this is the emotional side of me. And I've gotten to a place in my own retraining where I can have shit like my part of my body or my brain is throwing a tantrum over here. Yep. And it's saying it's kicking and screaming. And I'm over here going, you can do that crap over there. That's fine. Keep doing that. But I'm over here. If you want to, if you don't want to calm down right now, I get it. Do your thing. But I'm going to be over here because I don't want to participate in that right now.
And is that hypnosis, mindfulness, meditation, however you want to phrase it,
it's cognitive
behavioral therapy? What are we talking?
It's all of the above. And what I would say is that, and that's where, you know, a plug intended, where my brain warrior stuff comes in is that is that I'm not like married to one thing, because different, you need different things in different parts of your life. And depending on where you are personally, spiritually, and emotionally, one thing isn't the thing for most people. Yeah. And when you get to different parts of your life as well, you'll need to switch it up, and the brain adapts as well. That's the other bitch about all this, is that you'll do one kind of therapy. We all know this. Somebody said something to you, and why is it, Nick, somebody said two or three words to you, and all of a sudden everything in your life shifted. You're like, it got easier. A burden was lifted. I felt so much better. Right. It's because something, phraseologically, spiritually, energetically, went to your subconscious and fit and release something. But over time, your brain will adapt to certain modalities. And so we need to keep on our game of doing certain practices and varying them up. I'm not saying you need 20 of them. I'm just saying, right, let's say you're a visualization person, then you might want to do some NLP to layer on that. Or you might want to do some
meditation. What's NLP? Sorry.
Neuro-linguistic programming, right?
Oh, cool.
You can do some havening. This is a process by which we can produce delta waves in the body through visualization and rubbing the shoulders. We can show how it retracts trigger proteins in the brain, right? Or we start doing some tapping or some emotional freedom technique, acupressure. We can get into a regress into sort of a more emotionally vulnerable state, and ask the body, what is it that it needs? And basically we get through the subconscious gate. We start getting questions from the subconscious. Why is this pain here? Why is this blockage here? And you start to get, there are many different techniques that I think that could, and I would just but we don't have a culture where it's like, yo, bro, what did you do today? Well, I worked out, you know, I crushed that and got this part of my business built. And oh, by the way, I worked on my emotional self too. And, you know, I got some good crying. I mean,
we don't talk about that. And to the point earlier, that's like, hey, keep your emotions out of this. We don't care about all that. Nobody asked you about your emotions. So calm the hell down there. All right. Last one, Neil. One more, but I got to ask people where to get you. But you said earlier you've got 20% left on your growth process.
Right.
I would argue that you've got more and you just don't know it. But in your head, because I have no idea, like I'm 39 years old, right? And I'm like, I have no idea where I'm going. And I have no idea what the end game is on this whole deal. And like, what it's ultimately going to look like, hopefully when I'm 80, 90, 100 years old, like, and you've got all of that wisdom and knowledge trapped in you from all those years, and hopefully we'll still be able to have the ability to get it out. Otherwise, what a waste. So there you go to the brain warriors, like, take care of your brain, people. But with your 20% that you've got left, where are you going to be? What's the vision?
So let's qualify that. When I say 20% left, what I mean is that of my original health journey, my health goals, that's cool. What I have left. In terms
okay,
of
cool.
overall development, it's infinite.
It's infinite.
Yes, there's
it's infinite.
People say, well, when does this end? Because that's one of the things, and you know this now too, going down this road, Nick, is that like you have something that opens you up and cracks you open. And this is giving you a gift in a way by rewiring your brain. Then you think, well, when am I going to be done rewiring? Never, because that's never. All of life, right? It's just, it is going to look differently. It's going to have different energetic practices. It may have different medical practices, but I, till my last breath on earth, I will be rewiring and revibing, you know, my body, my conscious mind, my subconscious mind. So there's no end.
I love that. Yeah. It's every single day. Our motto in the family is, and this is my motto that I'm imparting on the kids. They will know this saying is, I'm not as good today as I will be tomorrow.
I love
until it. The day I die, I'm not as good today as I will be tomorrow. And it's just part of it. Like, growth is infinite, right? And it's going to change. I'm not going to be able to lift the weights or run or do the things, but it doesn't mean that you become stagnant. It doesn't mean that you stop growing and changing and adapting and learning and all that. So that is awesome. Where can people find you that want to connect with you? Because I would imagine after this conversation, a lot of people would want to pick your brain and have you help them, help guide them to the promised land.
Oh, yes. So thank you for that. So Instagram is at the Brain Warrior, or you can just simply email me. My first name is Neil, N-E-A-L, at thebrainwarrior.com. And my website is the same, thebrainwarrior.com.
Easy. Awesome, Neil. That was fun. We'll have to do this again. I think there's so much more, so many more avenues to go down. So thank you. Let's plan on it.
Appreciate it, brother. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Believe Network. If you liked this podcast, be sure to subscribe and check us out on Believe.com and follow us on Instagram and Twitter and like us on Facebook. That's B-L-E-A-V. Do you believe?